This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am with my co-host and two special guests for one last time. This is our fourth and final, for now at least, episode on GenAI, and we're going to be talking about some of the pitfalls and challenges on deploying GenAI.
Yeah, if we kept the best for last, we spent three episodes telling you how to do this and how perfect and wonderful it all is, and now we're going to tell you why it all going to end in tears anyway.
I don't think that's quite how the episode goes, but maybe we need to see what Alex and Zach's take is on it.
Let's do that.
All right. So let's dive a little bit more into LLM ops as a whole. So let's say someone's kind of interested in adopting Gen AI, getting into doing it right, doing it properly. You know, what are the major kind of steps or phases of LLM ops? Like, what are the major kind of pieces of this puzzle that people need to think about this, bucket it into?
Yeah, I like to bucket it into three areas, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Testing, which is, you know, your traditional A-B testing. Is model A better than model B? If I'm doing a RAG approach, is my search performant? How can I test before I go to production for a release? And that, you know, incorporates all your CI/CD workflows as well. The second bucket is your monitoring, which we talked about briefly, but, you know, in line with the deployment, filtering for safety or prompt injection, adversaries, stuff like that. And then the third piece, often forgot about, but also very important, is your user feedback. Driving development roadmap, driving improvements, whether that's mining application data, like and user behavior, or whether that's direct feedback through a survey or through a thumbs up, thumbs down button that you can then, you know, mine that data and try to get insights that way. But I generally like to break it down into those three categories.
And like, which out of those three, like which are the ones where people fall down? Like you mentioned, for example, the user testing is the often not done quite as much as perhaps it should be. But like, what are the pitfalls for each of them?
Ooh, that's a good question. In the evaluation and testing, I think the biggest pitfall is how to do test, because you're not just looking at precision and recall or, you know, AUC curve. It's a shift in paradigm to these probabilistic approaches from, I think Alex mentioned earlier, having the LLM grade your LLM, you know, where you're making sure it's coherent and fluent. You can also do things I like to call LLM encoding plus math, which is like maybe you take the embeddings from your response and from the ground truth, the context retrieved, and you do a cosine similarity to see if your information that you retrieved or your ground truth is similar to what your output actually was. So there, you know, that's a little bit more to the right on the deterministic sliding scale, I would say. And then human evaluation. You can't forget about just manual evaluation through 50 sample prompts for high leverage or your most important workflows. Take the time to assess it manually and actually look and make sure that you're getting the responses you expect and that those responses are high quality. For monitoring, I don't know if there's any pitfalls, I would say, nothing that jumps to mind. And then for feedback, it's I think biggest pitfall is that it's often forgot, as I mentioned before.
Yeah, for the monitoring, maybe how would you set your SLIs? Because typically monitoring, you're going to monitor against certain thresholds that you want to reach or not fall below, but as this is also new, what is a good what does good mean? And that's different for every user, probably for every use case. Right. Good will be a different thing. So just stealing good from somebody else, right, not a good idea.
Yeah, you're very right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just to avoid, yeah, and you're saying part of the evaluation, this is what, I guess, stepping kind of a little back, what a lot of customers are kind of evaluating is they're evaluating the models. So whether it's a vendor model or it's an open source model for just basic that being able to do a side by side. So let's try it run a GPT-3.5, GPT-4, Llama, Mistral, and run it through the same prompts, the same kind of questions. How well is each model actually running? This is part of the eval framework that Zach is actually saying, okay, let's just out of the base, how well is it performing? Now let's introduce like a RAG, introduce different engines. How well is it working with an open source, maybe it's a face, right, in memory, or go throw in proprietary Elastic, AI search, or other ones. How well is it now performing with me actually doing this? This can also go into the monitoring. It's like, well, how much time am I spending between the search engine retrieving my results and getting the context versus of actually feeding in? How much data am I actually stuffing back into the language model? Because each language model has a context window. And the smaller the model, the smaller the context window, the less documents you can provide, so less relevant it is. And that is part of all of that evaluation that actually comes in, both for your cost, because there's a cost associated time and money for when you're actually interacting with these systems. You have to maintain, create indexes, and build all of this out. So there's a lot of kind of the development aspects that are kind of coming in before the LLM ops that typically your typical LLM application lifecycle goes through. The LLM ops is just encapsulates and automates all of it, and it tries to run. And then you have, as Zach said, you can have either LLM-based evaluations or human-based evaluations. How well is this actually running? But those are kind of the two top ones that I see as far as techniques that folks are evaluating with as well.
Mm-hmm. But guys, this takes a lot of time. My boss wants this up and running on the website tomorrow. Pitfall number one.
This goes back to everything that we said before, even MLOps. In order to be to do LLMOps or to do MLOps or to do DevOps, you have to have software engineering background and practices. None of this goes away from just the basic software engineering principles. So yes, there is a smart engine that answers this, but in order to make this a software grade package, not something that's you just slap together as a prototype, in order to deploy it at scale, this takes time. So the answer is to your boss is no, this has to go through the paces. You cannot have it by the end of the week.
Or you end up with wacky situations happening and your logo being splashed all over the news because you've released something that's given a car away or introduced some interestingly colored Vikings or
who knows what. There's no such thing as bad publicity,
right? And I think we'll start to see this more and more, it become more and more popular, for lack of a better word. But, you know, as companies are on this first wave, oftentimes the release of the initial LLM developed chatbot is to internal facing users as explain my benefits or help me do my job in some way. And the next iteration is going to be all these companies releasing customer facing or consumer facing bots and LLMs. And that is when the LLM ops are going to be ratcheted up to 11, because that's what, way higher leverage, way higher risk than an internal facing application.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, so maybe start to sort of dust off the crystal ball. I'm sure you all have kind of next to your monitors there. What do you think is the next kind of big phase change or big evolution that we'll see in the kind of LLM, Gen AI, LLM ops kind of space? What's the next big push that we'll say? And Alex, start with you.
Probably the biggest is going to be seeing these engines and the robotics, as we were talking about. This is something we saw with NVIDIA, is being able to have these aids, literally mechanical aids, that will work. I'm going to be able to do a lot of the things, because it's now we'll have the ability to actually understand and learn how to do this. This is something that they're not going to come like pre-built. Oh, this knows how to do cut potatoes and make fries. This thing is going to be able to now learn. You're going to be able to show it, teach it, give it examples. View shell prompt learning, essentially. Like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. This thing is going to learn on the fly. So this is how far in advance, I cannot say, but feels a lot sooner than we think. I think this is where it's probably going to be for me. That's kind of the big one.
Nice. Zach, how about you?
Okay. I think my prediction is we're going to see the continued democratization of these models, not only for small language models or fine-tuned iterations, but also I think we'll see large language models or large, you know, multimodal models trained by companies that you wouldn't necessarily consider to be technology companies. So instead of your, you know, Twitter, Facebook, OpenAIs of the world doing these model developments, I think you're going to start to see some of the titans of industry in their respective verticals start to train their own specific models, you know, tailored to their needs or their industry needs, and start competing on that front.
Nice. Jon, any predictions on from you?
Well, I'm going to go off script a little bit here. I'm going to say something that a lot of people won't agree with me, but I think the whole Gen AI and LLM thing, it'll give an enormous boost to human creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the stuff that's now being done better by LLMs is quote-unquote easy stuff, copy-paste stuff. And we'll, as humans, as a human race, we'll have to react. We will react to it. And I think we'll see in the next decade creativity in a way that we haven't seen before. Not just making paintings different, but like when the Impressionists came up, a totally new style of making paintings about actually not painting a picture that is representative, but more of a feeling in there. That was a huge shift. And I think the whole LLM thing is going to force us to, as a human, as a creative person, as a creative being, to find other ways of expressing ourselves. And I think that's nobody talks about that a lot, but I think that's something that not soon, it's going to take a while, but that's what I'm looking forward to be honest.
Interesting. I mean, obviously, like my perhaps two big predictions are, like, we're definitely getting closer and closer to Skynet, and that's obviously very scary. Yeah, sci-fi has told us everything we need to know about.
I respect our robot overlords.
exactly. So a little bit worried about that, but you know, have my fingers crossed. And the second one is, I'm looking forward to, like, we've in a truly, truly surprising kind of turn of events, we've, you know, created systems that are able to generate some of the most, like, amazing and wonderful things, like, you know, pictures of cats in space playing cards. Like, put that in as a prompt and there you go, amazing pictures will flow. And yet, you know, some of the most fundamental and really rather boring and dull tasks are still very much down to humans to execute on. So I look forward to some of the more dull, monotonous, tedious tasks being taking on the AI and generative AI workloads. And to Alex's point, some of the home automation kind of taking some of that load from us. But Jon, you're happy with the dull, monotonous workloads?
No, Dave, you will be taking out the trash tonight, like every other night.
Damn it. Oh, dear. All right. So before we wrap up, anything else that either of you would like to share before we conclude things? Zach?
Sure. I often hear LLMs and generative AI referred to as the wild, wild west. And I think what I want the lasting message from this session to be is, call me, maybe this is my history buff coming out, but I think LLM ops can do a lot of the demystification and can act as a Wyatt Earp or a Doc Holliday and start taming this wild, wild west a little bit. And that's my closing remark.
Alex, how about you?
Advice to practitioners, if you're just coming in from data science, a particular background, just like with MLOps, get close to your DevOps friends and follow the same software practices that they've been doing. Because all it is an extension, just applying new tools to new processes here, but practices very similar.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. Well, in that case, thank you both for joining us. It's been really great chatting with you on this topic. Alex has the dubious, I would say, sort of not what's the word I'm looking for, Jan? Honor. There's the word. Honor. It's been a long day. The dubious honor of having been on one of this podcast's most popular episodes in its history so far, and if the hype is anything to be believed, then I think this may well even exceed that. So let's see how it goes. But really, really appreciate both of you spending time with us and with our audience, and really great chatting with you.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you both.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for the last part of our great conversation with Alex and Zach. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on the podcast. It's always great to have Alex, and with Zach, I think you found a new best friend. So hopefully we'll get to talk to him again sometime in the future on all things ML, AI, or who knows, anything else we'll talk about, I guess.
Indeed, indeed. Like, really, really cannot thank both Alex and Zach enough for spending time with us, sharing their knowledge with our audience, and sharing their knowledge with us as well. I certainly learned quite a bit during these last four episodes. I think this one was very much the cherry on the cake, as it were.
The cherry on the cake of disaster, yes. Not that the podcast is a disaster. We were trying, there's an episode about avoiding disaster with LLM ops and things.
Yeah, you tried, but you failed, but never mind.
Well, I tried to fail, so I succeed.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, with that, we're going to stop our coverage on GenAI for a little while now. I think we've joined the hype enough. We waited for a while until it all got landed a little bit more. Now we've kind of put our little dimes in the bucket, in the purse, whatever you want to call it, for a while now. So let's move on to other and better things in the future. What those things are, nobody knows, least of us.
This is true.
And if you have nothing else to add,
nothing else from me,
then that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast. You can become a Patreon. Every contribution does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe episodes. You can hit notification bells. You can do YouTube stuff. And that does make Dave so, so happy. You can still go to our old website at www.roaringalpha.org. There's links there to the Patreon page, YouTube page, and other stuffs. And you can send your feedback by email, all your questions, things we should talk about. Because again, if you have something you want us to talk about, please let us know and send it to podcast@roaringalpha.org. Until next time, my name is Dick Doug Young.
And my name is Cherry on Top Dave.
I look forward to talking to you again next week.
See you then.